And there's a lot of spying that goes on all the time, and people trying to take ideas from other people and trying to outdo one another. And so it's really important to conceal what you're doing and to, you know, at least to not broadcast around the things that you're working on, especially with the project that we're working on with the ideas that we had. We thought that we had a gold mine in our hands and that we were going to be able to do something really major with this idea. So we had to hide it as much as we could for as long as we could. And the way that they chose to hide it, hide what we were working on, was to set up the company to look as if it was anything but a company that was coming together to build a game machine. Instead, they made the company look like it came into existence to sell game peripherals. Originally, they had a product called the Amiga Power Stick, which I can show you right here. This tiny little joystick was, although it may look silly and small, it was a great joystick. It's my number two favorite joystick of all time. Number one being, of course, the Epix joystick, which is, it's really great. It's really great. But this one is number two. I love this joystick. I love this joystick so much, I still have a box full of them in my closet, you know, and they don't break. Joysticks break all the time, but these, for some reason, don't seem to fall apart. I don't know exactly why. And so they set the company up to the real world to look as if it was HiToro and then Amiga Computer, a company that made game peripherals. And the industry said, what's that new company over there on Scott Avenue? And they went and they looked with their binoculars in the window and they saw, oh, joysticks, no problem, okay. And it was a reasonably good idea, because not only then would they sell these joysticks and make a little bit of profit off of it and hide what they're doing from the world, but they would also be able to set up the channels of distribution so that in the future, when they did come out with this game machine, they would already have established their contacts with the sales and marketing people out there in the world so that they could sell the game machine through the same channels that they had set up for the joystick. They also had a second product called the Amiga Joyboard. The Amiga Joyboard was an interesting little peripheral. It was basically a joystick that you would stand on, which is kind of weird. Most normal games, it was strange to play standing on the joystick, on the Joyboard. There were some games, like just about the time that I joined up, there was a real popular game from Activision called Decathlon. And with Decathlon, the object of Decathlon was to hold the joystick in your hand, and the way you'd make the little guy run across the screen was by banging the joystick like this, and the faster you banged it, the faster you'd run. This is obviously a game designed by joystick manufacturers. And then you play this game on a Joyboard, and you couldn't go like this. Instead, you had to stand on a Joyboard like this. I'm talking serious cardiovascular workout, folks. You know, and it never occurred to people that this was a really stupid thing to do, because you could go out and do it on the street, you know. But the problem with doing it on the street, of course, is that you don't have a little score telling you how well you're doing, you know. Or in my case, how badly you're doing. Yeah. It was also really interesting to play Pac-Man with this thing, because you went like, you know, the thing's chasing me, oh, it's going to bite my butt, oh, you know. Oh, what a great device this was. We had a woman, a personality, a sports personality, woman named Susie Chaffee, who many of you might know as Susie Chapstick, who sells the, you know, the Chapstick. You know, out in California, you don't see a whole lot of Chapstick commercials, I gotta tell you. So this part of the story usually falls flat out there, but you guys know about Chapstick. Susie Chaffee was our agent for showing off. Can everyone see these okay? Is it dark enough? Okay. She would go and take the Joyboard out to various trade shows. She'd take it on the morning news shows, and she'd show it, show how it worked, you know, and she would normally, like in this case, she's showing the surfing game. But the one that we always liked the best was her skiing performance when she would show this downhill skiing, because that's her main sport. She's a skier, a rather accomplished one, an extremely good one. And I don't mean to say anything bad about her, but it was kind of silly. Over here, I have to show you a videotape that I brought in of Susie Chaffee demonstrating the joystick.
Video games and just moving your hands around. Now you get your full body into it. You actually
joyboard.
Feel it's called the joyboard instead of a joystick.
Right.
You stand on it and get your full body into it. And you can see the positions you do for school.
Now you know about these kinds of things.
Great technique, huh? Now this guy's going to try it. Look at his form. Now, let's look at Susie's form again. Okay. Yeah. That was Susie Chaffee. We used to enjoy when she'd come around Amiga and pick up more joy boards to take out to the shows, because we'd always manage to talk her into giving us another quick demonstration, because we thought she had great form, boy. This joy board is also an interesting thing. How many people in the audience, may I ask, actually own Amiga computers? Wow! All of you! Let me ask, how many don't? Okay. So you two. Okay, fine. This is... most of you have probably never seen the Guru Meditation number. Yes. But for those of you who have, a little known truth about the Amiga is the origin of the Guru Meditation number. It came, in fact, from the Joy Board, because all of the other games that we used to play, taking into account all the other games that we used to play, the game that we liked the most at Amiga was a game that we made up ourselves. It was called the Zen Meditation game. And the way you play the Zen Meditation game is you would get up on a Joy Board and sit lotus style and then meditate. It was admittedly not the world's most interesting game, but it was cool because you get bonus points for reaching Nirvana, you know, which is a real interesting thing. And the truth is that we designed the Amiga computer using the Joy Board extensively, especially in the software group, because every time we'd be writing our software and the software would crash, we'd all get out our Joy Boards and get up on them and say, "Oh, why did that crash?" And which, of course, then led to the Guru Meditation number that you see when it comes up like that. And a lot of people have heard me tell this story that we used to, you know, float around the room on our Joy Boards and not believe me that this was really something that used to go on. Because I've told this story a lot and people think that this is part of the fiction, but it's not part of the fiction. When I was putting this slideshow together to show you guys, I was shooting a lot of pictures of the old Amiga equipment out in my backyard, and I thought what I'd do is real fast hop up on the Joy Board and levitate so that my wife could take a picture. And I'd, whoa, how about that one? Sorry, wrong one. And I thought I'd make a slide of this and show it for you guys here. My son saw me doing this. He, of course, wanted in. Here's a picture of my little boy. He wanted to see if he could get it up. He couldn't. He's too young. He has to get older. Here's another picture of my son, by the way. Looks like his dad, doesn't he? Here's a picture of my lovely wife. Who's that guy? Huh? Close, huh? Close. Okay, anyway. So, there we were, working furiously designing this machine. Software guys with absolutely no hardware whatsoever to develop on. The hardware guys working like maniacs trying to get the hardware to work, failing miserably. The software guys were filled with glee. Because we got to take vacations, you know. We're sitting out in the back, smoking cigarettes, enjoying ourselves, you know. And no, I'm just kidding. We, in the software group, actually, were not willing to wait around for the hardware to come together. So we spent a lot of time pretending that we had hardware. And the way that we did that most often was to create little pieces of software that emulated the way the hardware would work, emulated the way those three custom chips would work. We were developing on a computer called a Sage computer, which on which we had typically four or five developers, each developing on a Sage 4. A Sage 4 is a machine that's not fit for one person to develop on. So the fact that we had four on there was pretty interesting. And it was a 68,000 base machine, and we had these software emulators of the way of the hardware chips themselves. And so we would go ahead and we were trying to develop software that would run on it. And of course, the software would run in real slow motion compared with how it would work someday when the real hardware came together. But that was okay. And the hardware guys were working furiously, trying to put together the breadboards of the chips. And it was starting to get real important for all of this stuff to come together well, because this is now getting on to the end of 1983, and we were starting to run out of money. It was starting to get pretty tight with money, and it became really apparent to us that we had to make a major showing of the stuff that we had done so far at the January CES show, the January CES being in Las Vegas. They have the June one here in Chicago. Once when I talk, I switched those around and then realized I was saying that they're going to get 50,000 people into Chicago in the wintertime in January for a show. not in your life. And so we had to show something that was great, something that was spectacular. And the future of the company started to sound like it was going to hinge on this, because the venture capitalists were starting to get a little bit nervous about their money, and at the same time, a terrible thing was happening. The bottom was dropping out of the game market. I don't know if you guys recall back, but in 1983 was like 83 was the last year when there was a gazillion of these game arcades out there where you could go and play these coin-op games, and everyone had one. You know, every street corner, grandmas are sending out their basements. You know, wow, bring them in. Kids playing video games everywhere you went. And it was a real big thing, but it was dying. It was dying off dramatically. And here we had this game machine that we were working on, and it started to look like the market was at least going soft, and it started to look pretty desperate for us. So we knew that we had to have a real good showing at the January CES. And time went by, time ticked along, the hardware was going to be done beginning of December, we were getting ourselves all geared up for it. Some things went wrong, some other things went wrong, we made some bad designs, they did, you know, it's just a lot of little things went wrong, and the hardware didn't actually come available until about, I think it was the day before Christmas, or 2 days before Christmas. The January CES show, for perspective, is January 4th. So the hardware first came together about 9-10 days before the show. And the hardware guy said, "Here you go, okay." We said, "Ah, thanks." And it was no problem for us, because we had all these software emulators that already emulated the way the hardware would work. So all we'd have to do is change a few lines in our files, so that instead of going to the software emulators, we would go to the hardware, the actual hardware itself, no problem. So we went and changed a few lines, recompiled all our code, put it on there. Guess what? Our emulators didn't work anything like the hardware at all. None of our code works whatsoever. So here we were 9 days before CES with hardly anything working at all. While I'm here, I can show you some of the people that were working on the hardware. Here's Jay Miner again with two of the other guys that did a lot of stuff around Amiga. That's Glenn Keller next to Jay and Tom Cahill next to him. And there on the on the table in front of them is some of the pieces of hardware of the machine before it all actually came together. They're working furiously to get it there. Here's a picture of one of my favorite people. This is Carl Sassenrath. He did the multitasking operating system of the machine, known as Exec. This guy, no one knows who he is exactly. That's Dave Needle. Dave Needle is a god among hardware designers. He is second in importance to the Amiga, only to Jay Miner himself. And this is how Dave Needle always used to show up for work. It was an incredible thing. What you don't see in this picture is that he's wearing shorts. Dave Needle used to like to wear shorts while he was working, because every once in a while he would knock a piece of hot solder loose off of a wire and it would drop on his bare legs, and he'd say, "Boy, I like that." Yeah. So, here's what they delivered to us. Most of you probably know that inside the Amiga are three high-performance chips, special VLSI chips that we designed to be the heart and soul, the guts of the actual performance of the Amiga computer. And the first pass at designing the hardware for the chips was, of course, not to actually do the chips, but to create something in hardware that performed like the chips would perform one day. So what this is this is an example of, this is actually an illustration of the Agnes chip. This is the real one, by the way. This is the one that we first had, the first one that came together. And what it has on it are, there's 8 breadboards on there, and what you can't see in this photograph is that they're all hinged together along the back so that they can fan out like that, so that engineers could get in there with their little fingers and fix things if needed. And each one of those boards had about 250 chips. So, you know, times 8, lots of chips. Unfortunately, lots of things can go wrong with lots of chips. And there were 3 of these, one for each of the chips. There was also a 4th one that was the breadboard itself. The whole machine also, by the way, was called Lorraine. Lorraine was our code name for what we were working on. Lorraine was the name of the president's wife, too, and at first, she was honored to have the machine named after her. She came in during those 9 days between when we got the hardware and CES, and she heard the things we were saying about Lorraine. Then she wasn't quite so honored. Here's another view of it. Oh, wait, let me go back to this one. It got a little washed out in this photograph. Can you guys see the arrow? Okay, down here, what this is, you can't really see it because it got pretty washed out, but this is a piece of paper that one of the software guys, the Dale, tacked to Agnes to remind the software and the hardware guys. It says, "If horizontal lines appear at vertices of area fills, touch pin 15 E25 on Agnes 6 to ground." Yeah. You only see the chip side in this photograph. Here in this photograph, you can see both the chips and what the back sides of the chips looked like. There was about 1 trillion wires altogether for each one of these things. They were an incredible mass, twisted, gnarled, tangled collection of wires. It was incredible. And and every once in a while, the thing would break, and we call one of the hardware guys over and say, "It broke." And I would say, "Oh, what happened?" And say, "Well, it was running, and then the screen went blank." He said, "Oh, it must be this wire right here." And he'd reach in, and say, and he'd jiggle it, and it would work again. And I'm like, "Yeah." Geniuses, I swear. Here's a view of one of the hardware guys working on the chips. It's not a very good picture, unfortunately, but it is romantic, so I threw it in here for you. Here's the original workbench. That's the whole system. You can see them here. One, three tips. This one's laying down on its side, and here's the main board itself. I have a slightly clearer picture of it here, so you can see the different pieces. Although I mocked this one up in my backyard just so I could get a better picture of what it could look like. And in fact, I put the whole thing together. I plugged it in and, you know, put all the wires where they used to go just so that it would make a nice picture. And then I got nostalgic and said, you know, I wonder if... And then I brought down all the power grid in all of Foster City, you know? And the fire department came out and hosed me down for it, you know? Yeah. Where these things connect into the breadboard here, they had these plugs. Here's a picture of a close-up of... Oh, that's a different view. Here's a picture of one of the plugs. Look at that thing. It's incredible. You know, and the hardware guys in the audience are saying, yeah. God. So, excuse me. Oh, that's right. Oh boy, I blew that, didn't I? Sorry, that's a new program and rented fingers to borrow a joke. Let me get back to here. Show slides pretty fast, doesn't it? This is my program. Okay. Let's test it and see. Does it crash? No, it doesn't crash. Okay. So, this was the hardware that they gave us to work on. And we set about working furiously to get this hardware, to get the software working, to get demos together. We wanted, of course, to have the widest, richest, most wonderful set of demos available. Unfortunately, it was right before Christmas, and a lot of us were faced with the question of, well, do we work on Christmas Day and have good demos for CES and have the company succeed, or do we spend Christmas Day with our families and lead to death, ruin, destruction, doom, you know, and all kinds of horrible things like that? So most of us worked on Christmas Day, and it was kind of sad. It was especially hard for me because I'm a real family guy, and you know, it was my first Christmas away from my family, and then to actually work on Christmas Day, you know, it was kind of tough. But it wasn't so bad because I was with friends, and we did have a vending machine there, so we could, you know, give each other little candy bars for Christmas. You know, Merry Christmas. So it was pleasant. We worked furiously. All the while that we were working, we had harder guys that were constantly on call. Here, for instance, is a picture of one of them. You may think that looks like Jay Minor. They were there the entire time that we were there. There was always some hardware guys there. The software guys came and went. Dale Luck and I, in particular, worked there almost the entire time. Those entire 9 days, we worked nonstop trying to get stuff done. A lot of my work depended on the things that Dale was doing, and so I was constantly badgering him. Okay, I'm working real fast, I am. Here's a picture of Dale working real fast. The truth of the matter is that we had so many things to get done for the show that Dale wasn't really... I mean, he was sleeping, but what Dale was doing was he carried around his pillow with him the entire time that he was working there. And the computers that we're using at the time had a program on it that we wrote called Beep. You type in Beep and it would beep. And it had a type-ahead buffer, so you could type in an instruction and have the computer go ahead and do that instruction, which would take a while. And you'd also be able to type in Beep long before it would actually be executed. So what we used to do, and Dale was an expert at this, he would carry his pillow with him at all times. He'd type in the compile instruction, type in Beep, and go to sleep. 5 minutes later, beep, he said, oh, yeah, oh, back to work. It was incredible. And the hardware, I don't have a good picture of this, unfortunately, but the hardware was set up, the first ever working Amiga hardware was set up on that workbench, and it was really delicate, really extremely delicate stuff. So delicate that you had to always make sure that you did just the right things when you're around it. And the most important thing to do was to not zap it with static electricity. And so to keep people from accidentally zapping it with static electricity, we had built a kind of a corridor that you had to walk up through to get to the bench. And the corridor had anti-stat mat on the ground, and there was a lot of metal poles around and things that you would even accidentally touch and ground yourself before you got to the hardware. And we had these signs that said, ground thyself, you know, to remind us. And it was interesting, too, because you came up this kind of this aisle, and there was a low-hanging cable there. So as you approached the Amiga, you had to come up the aisle and go like this, you know. Yeah, and then there was a time that the thing stopped working, and we called one of the hardware guys. He said, it stopped working, and he ran over, and he came over and found, let's see,